Blog Talk Radio.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Yasagonige, Will Bluewater, a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Aginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Hello, everybody. Your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from Booger County in the mysterious Ozarks in Mid-America. Our guest is Utadihi Hicks. Happy Hicks is chief of the Shalagi Nudigi. Do I get that right, chief? Shalagi Nudigi?
Yeah, close. Shalagi Yi Nudagi.
Okay. It shows you what
I'm talking about. Shalagi is who we really are. Yi is located in Nudagi of Texas.
I don't know. You know, I have never taken Cherokee lessons, and I know how to write some of it. But anyway, welcome to the interview, Chief Hicks. Chief and folks, you'll have to excuse both of us. We both have problems with allergies, and you might hear either one of us coughing and sputtering a little bit during the interview. But I have been acquainted with Chief Hicks, I guess it's about 1998. And I spoke with him on the phone several times. Chief is probably inside Special Forces Green Berets circles. He's probably one of the most well-known Green Berets in history. He more or less ran the secret war in Laos for the U.S. government, along with Vang Pao, and you're also better.
That was more special operations than anything else.
And veteran of Korea and Vietnam both, I guess.
Yep.
But a lot of people don't realize that the Cherokees have a history in Texas also. It's a fascinating history and one that's not over. And Steve wants to tell folks, let me give a little bit of a background first from what I know, and then we'll turn you loose. Prior to the Trail of Tears, going back as far as about 1721, the Cherokees began migrating into Mexico. other groups migrated into what was then France, what's now Missouri, in the late 1700s. And traditionalist Cherokees moved to and established an Aniguidawa, or traditional government, in Arkansas, and had a reservation, a federal government reservation in Arkansas in 1817. But their chief saw fit to move into what is now Texas approximately during that period of time. And people have no idea, because it's not covered in the history books, that that it wasn't for the Cherokees. The state of Texas, well, number one, because they served as a buffer between the Mexicans and the Americans, and they chose to be neutral. Texas is now part of the Union. At least that's what they say. Some people would dispute that. But anyway, so go ahead and tell us a little bit more about the Cherokees in Texas. Chief, welcome.
Okay. Chief Diwali, that is Bowl, B-O-W-L in our language.
Uh-huh.
And whites call him Bowles, B-O-W-E-L-S, Chief Bowles for some reason. They tagged that onto him, trying to put him in with an English trader during the old days.
Well, you've got him, Bowl.
Yeah, Bowl. Diwali. And some people in Oklahoma says Diwali. That's a lower Cherokee dialect. And I speak over the hill, the Kutztwo Dalee. That's where my people are from, along the Little Tennessee River. He came to, like I say, to Missouri, and with the great earthquake of 1811, they decided they would just move out of there, and they moved over to Arkansas. The U.S. government wanted them to move them above the White River, and he says, I'm not moving anymore. He thought he was already in Spanish territory, which had been once upon a time, then the French, and then the U.S. took over. And so he picked up his people and came south across the Red River into Texas. Wound up finally, that was in 1819, wound up finally around the area that I live now, up here in East Texas, around Tyler, Texas, in Smith County, Cherokee County, Texas. And the Spanish had always invited them in, and the Spanish wanted them in, wanted them, just what you said, to kind of be a buffer between Spanish land and also the new Americans that they didn't trust at all. So they went, come down here, developed many towns, because they were very, they elected all their town chiefs. They elected the main chief of Uku, which is the head chief, which is Diwali. They elected all the people. The Jalagi, or Cherokee people, always have. That's who we are. Ani Jalagi means our people. The word Cherokee is a foreign word. It started out from the Choctaw. They call us Chalukchi. That means people from the cave country.
Uh-huh.
Because we were in the mountains of Great Smoky Mountains. And it's been changed around. I think I've found 50 different spellings of the word. Finally got down to C-H-E-R-O-K-E-E. So he'd come down here, established, like I said, fields. They're great farmers. Always have been great farmers, besides great warriors you've ever seen. The greatest. And even President George Washington said that when he was a lieutenant colonel in the Colonial Army. He said, during the French and Indian Wars, he said, give me a Cherokee to go with me, because one Cherokee is worth two other men. That's been written in history. So he wrote to the English, at the British general, English general. So they established here, was going fine. They had a good relation actually with the Spanish, and then when it came, changed over them to the Mexican government, took over. And 1823, then they became, well done, documented with the Mexican government how well they were. In fact, the Mexican government gave him a lieutenant colonel commission in the Mexican Army. And he was called Colonel Diwali after that. or Colonel Bowles. Also were very good friends of Sam Houston.
Uh-huh.
And when they made the documents here of giving this land to the Cherokees in 1835, the Republic of Texas, he signed for Chief Bowles. He put down Lieutenant Colonel Bowles, B-O-W-L.
Uh-huh.
And then D.Y. put his text, you know, back. So it's in the history that that's the way his name was written, and then everybody changed over to B-O-W-E-L-S. They were here until the Texas, Republic of Texas Army came and raided them and all the Indians in East Texas in July of 1839. The reason they did is because the president at the time didn't like any Indian in the world. He was going to get rid of everybody, all the Indians out of East Texas. And so he sent them up. They came in July the 15th and 16th. On the 16th, they killed and scattered a lot of our people out. They killed Diwali. He was 80-some years old, and they killed him over here right on the other side of us in Van Zandt County. And some of the people, most of the people, like my family, ran to the woods, hid out, and then after the fighting was over with and everything settled down and all the whites left, they just come back to the land and started farming. You could be two things in Texas, black or white, but you couldn't be red. So they became white. And some were real dark ones was, later on, the government started calling them, listed them as black. But they came back. One group went towards Indian territory, and they had a fight trying to get through Choctaw country up to Tahlequah. Tahlequah didn't like them because they were real live Gilagi people. They weren't modernized yet. And Diwali and his people did not speak anything but a little Spanish, but they knew no English at all. And the reason Sam Houston was able to contact work with them was because that he knew our language. Mm-hmm. He knew their language.
Well, he'd been adopted by John Jolly and was a Cherokee.
Yes. And so then another group went south across the Rio Bravo, or the Rio Grande, at Eagle Pass into Mexico, and farmed a town close to a big ranch out there, right above or south of Zaragoza, Mexico. And it was a land of the Hacienda de Cortinos. And these people liked them. They got along with them. And finally, the Gilagi people there, the Cherokees, finally did just like we did up here. We married into the Anglos. They married into Mexicans. They have Mexican names, a lot of them. Some of them still have names that they got from English. Like part of my family is a band. Bands are well known on both sides of the border. So it's developed over the years. A lot of the people that stayed here, a lot of the people will not say that they're Indian because you could either be red or white, but you couldn't be both. And you couldn't be, white or black, you couldn't be red. Either one of those was fine. So they just stayed here and hid out, and it became, like my grandmother always said, that's my father's mother. His mother and father, my father's a little half Indian from Bobledam. And she always called herself Black Dutch when she got out of the house. She would not tell anybody that she was an Indian of any type. Because it was just, everybody kind of frowned her. And she was born in 1883 when it was really, really rough around here in all the world. After I retired, I was given a full medical retirement, 100% disabled, even though I did, after I retired, go to Central America and over Southeast Asia for a number of years. But after I retired, my father and I and some of the family and what have you joined a group called the Texas American Intertribal Association. American Indian Tribal Association. And he, when I started going down to Central America to work the Nicaraguan Indians, well, he kept saying, hey, let's get our tribe started back up. He was always pushing that. He said, you're a leader, you've been out, you've done all this thing, you know how to get people together. I was president of the association before I left, the time I left there. So I went down doing that, going over Central, Southeast Asia, and I just kind of let it go a little bit. And when I come back and, didn't go anymore, well, he hammered me, and he grabbed hold of me, and he said, do something. So we formed the Yalagi Yi Nadagi. And, of course, the Texas Cherokees, everybody likes to call them. The fact is, we, four of us got together right here in my war room, and we did not start up a new tribe. What we did, with the aid of my father, old man, and a lot of other people, we reinstated the Yalagi, or Texas Cherokee here in Texas, the Hawaii, when Hawaii was killed. Because we did not leave on our own. We were run off by force. So we had never left. And I talked to my old teacher, Jolly Hicks. He was born in Joint Snake District in Old Indian Territory when he was born, you know, many years ago. He was my grandfather's old second cousin. And I was, he and I was talking about it, and I said, hey, Jolly, I said, we are here for we never left. And that's what I signed on all my paperwork. We are here for we never left. And we never have. We're still here. A lot of all the old people. New people come in. My own family was going back and forth to the old country. Some of them got caught up in removal in 1839, and had to stay over there. And finally, they drifted back over here, as you know, just many years later. Because there wasn't no hurry, they couldn't go anywhere anyway and do anything, hardly. So, but we reestablished. We've got about 2,500 people that joined us. We don't care what where you live right now. We just want to know one thing. Are you Yalagi? If you're Cherokee, then you're with us. We're not like other tribes, our own tribe, that denies people their heritage because they're not on some role, you know, some U.S. government role. U.S. government role, U.S. government doesn't tell us who we are. And bluntly, my father said, if your mother doesn't know who you are, who in the hell does?
My mother knew who we were.
Yeah, even though breed Indian cowboy down in South Texas, he's pretty blunt to the point, I tell you.
Uh-huh.
The fact is, he died 4 years ago in December at age 96.
Uh-huh.
And his father died at 99. And his mother, she died young, Dad said. She died at 94. So, oh, God, with all this old pain that I'm living with, I'm in my 70s now, and I may go that long. Oh, boy. But we're here. We're trying. If we are recognized the United States government, that's fine. But we know who we are. We don't need the government of the United States or the government of Texas to tell us who we are. We know who we are.
Well, the Cherokees of Mexico, they're fairly recognized, and they recognize it.
Yes, right. Yeah, and the states recognize it. The fact is, with Dr. Charles Rogers, who is the head chief down there, they elected and appointed me to be the red chief, the war chief, for Mexico. And so we're getting pretty tight. The Mexican government itself does not recognize indigenous people. But any state can, and we've gotten recognized the three states right now.
Uh-huh.
So we in Mexico, right south of us.
Oh, yeah.
And especially with the people out of the governor out of Saltillo, Coahuila, Mexico.
Uh-huh.
He is we're pretty close with him.
So
good man, by the way.
Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
But we're here, operate out of my war room here where I live. Then we have a deputy chief. He is a name of Deputy Chief Joe Gentry. He is a retired Marine, Air Force Sergeant. When we have all the people elected, we have a seven membership in our, for a tribal council, all elected. And then we have leaders for towns, like central towns, northern towns. We even have one town that's made of a group of towns up in the far north, northwest.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of Yulagi people up there.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize how many were until some of them started contacting me.
Uh-huh.
And an old friend, he called me and he said, "Hey, Chief," he said, "we're going to join you." I said, "Okay." And I knew who he was. He said, "Can we start one up here?" And I said, "You better believe you can." I said, you're one of us. And said, "If that's what you want to do, and y'all go ahead and set your all your people up." And so a guy named Perkins is now the chief of them up there, Chief Perkins. So each one of the towns has their chief, just like in the old days when towns themselves had chiefs. Because we're not united in these towns, or we just got a group of towns and make them town chiefs. So we're here because we never left. So that's how it stands. Blue Otter. My war name is Askayadihi. That means man killer. I earned that in 1951 and as a rifleman in Korea, 1951-52. And very proud of it. Fact is, Jolly, my family member and old teacher, he told me when I killed my first man, I would become Askayadihi. And so that's who I am. And very proud of it. Nobody's proud of us when we came back from Korea, no matter whether you're black, white, or red, Nobody cared about us. I mean, they, where you been? Korea? Well, where in the heck is that, you know?
Oh.
And we came back from Vietnam. They sure did not care for us. And then finally, in Gulf War in Iraq, people are really starting to be proud of our soldiers and sailors and Marines, Air Force, and everybody, and I'm that blame glad and proud of it. You know, everybody should be proud of it. But sometimes we have some people in Indian countries, we call it, who's against everything the white man does, everything the United States government does. I want to tell you something. If anyone out there, white, has ever been, or black, has ever been to powwow, the first thing we do of a morning, we put up the flag, the American flag, United States of America flag. And then we play a flag, beat the drum for flag song. At $1,700 or 5 o'clock, we stop everything we're doing and go down and lower the flag and fold it and bring it off the dance ground. So, we're pretty proud.
Well, you know, Native people respect strength. They respect warriors. And, you know, we fought them for a long time. And people don't realize in 1866, the Indians in Oklahoma, after the Civil War, they signed a treaty that they would stop fighting between themselves and they would, between tribes, and they would stop fighting the United States government and be friends forever. And, only the Cherokee reserved the right to continue intra-tribal, fighting, and they made that a matter of public record. I mean, that's they are. You know, they turned their backs on the Chickamaugas. I mean, Chickamaugas basically were the people that. That went to Texas and some of my people.
Yeah, Dewali was a chief at Chickamauga with dragon canoes.
Mm-hmm. And
some of my own family was with them and everything.
I guess.
In fact, my name, the English name Hicks, has been in the nation since 1866. When Nathan Hicks came across the mountain and married Nanyehi,
1766, right. 1766.
Huh?
Don't you mean 1766?
Yeah, 1766.
Right.
What did I say?
1866.
Well, 1766. Mm. Yeah, 1766. Hanyawaya means one who goes about. Hanyawaya means wolf people.
Wolf people, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there was a chief Hicks. Hicks was one of the three chiefs in the Cherokee triumvirate. The name is very prominent.
Oh yeah,
From the 18th, I believe the Cherokee triumvirate that was around the 1820s and 30s.
Yeah,
and
the leader. Yeah. Nanyehi was the mother to the three Hicks children that started this whole bunch. And Nanyehi means one who goes about. She
Nancy Ward.
Up the name. Do what?
Nancy Ward, right?
No,
Nanyehi. Okay.
Ward. Both of them was Nanyehi, and they became Nancy. So the white people called them all, English called them all Nancy, instead of Nanyehi. She was a cousin of Nancy Ward. Nancy Ward was up in Isota, which is about 8 miles up the river.
Right.
Up the river from where her town was. Finally, Somali is the name, but the English call it Somali. And Ijate was called built by the English. So they changed lives around. We can't keep up what the heck we are or where we are.
Well, I know there's Cherokee Ward down in Texas. Hardy Ward's a friend of mine. He's very obviously a Cherokee. He was the world's archery champion in 1970. Previous to that, Ray Rogers was the world champion archer he was from Tahlequah. You know, he drove red for Sunbeam, Cherokees, they've always been prominent in international archery competition.
Well, they had it made up in the Indian Territory for being, because they've done what they always did. They had farms and everything. And then sent the dolls, came down and looked the clan over, and he said, hey, this is too much land for a bunch of red heathens. So he made an agreement in the, thought up a bill inside the United States Senate. It passed through Congress that all the land would be taken away from the Indians as a whole, as a tribe for each one, and given to individuals. Well, it's like after slavery, you know, 4 acres and a mule, you know, that kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And they take away all the rights of the chief. There would be no more chiefs. And then about 1916 or 17, it changed over to Oklahoma. And there was no more chiefs, no more real tribal land, owned land, or anything else, because it belonged to the state of Oklahoma. And that's when the people moved in, the white people moved in, Anglos, and took over all the land, the state, some of the best land, and all the oil wells and everything. It became oil wells. Everybody did but the Osage. The Osage took out a piece of the Cherokee Strip up in the north, just close to Kansas. But they kept their land. They would not sign with a treaty with the United States government.
Uh-huh.
And kept their land. That's the only reservation in Oklahoma.
That's right.
But I'm still learning.
Oh, the government, basically, they allotted the land, terminated the tribes, and terminated the government, and we had a constitution since, the second constitution, 1835, and then I believe it was in 1970, the Supreme Court ordered 5 civilized tribes to once again start up their governments, and I think it took them 5 years to come up with the constitution they have right now. But, you know, the interesting thing about it is had they started back up under the 1835 constitution, under Section 1, any Cherokee could have memorialized the council and been readmitted. But I don't believe that's what they wanted this time around. There's always been a faction that had run Tahlequah. They didn't like like Dragon Canoe. Dragon Canoe's successor, I'm having a senior moment right now. I can't remember his name, the chief. Dragon Canoe's successor, red haired.
Oh yeah, and I can't even think of it either.
But anyway, his family. I want to say Fields, but that's not right either. In the 1880s. His people managed to get on the roll. See, people don't know, some people don't know that unless you walk the Trail of Tears and sign the register at Tahlequah, you cannot have Cherokee citizenship to this day. And, the Chickamaugas, you know, a lot of them, they came across with their own free will. They came to Arkansas and here in Missouri years and years before the village, and they weren't going to sign. So once most of the Kachua Society lives here in Missouri and Arkansas, and when Chief Ross arrived here, he ordered all the chiefs from Missouri and Arkansas to show up at the Illinois campground. He says, you either show up by a certain date or you're outlaws.
Yeah.
A few did and most didn't. I live in Texas County. This county was formed by a bunch of mixed blood people that went down to Texas and then came back, and it's called Texas County. And I think if you looked at the dates of the incorporation of the it'd be interesting to take a look at the dates of the incorporation of the county and see if that corresponded with the Mirabeau Lamar.
39 removal here.
Yeah, and Mirabeau Lamar. I probably shouldn't even mention his name because he was the second governor of state of Texas and an Indian hater and a former Georgia man. And
He was president of the Republic.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Republic of Texas.
Right. He was the second, but he was former governor.
Sam, you, Yeah, he was. He took Sam Houston's place. He had worked. He had been the secretary for Crute in Georgia. He was a great healer of all the Cherokee and the Crete. And so he said, "Oh, we're going to get rid of all of them," which they did a pretty good job of it.
You know, and they Chief Dulali was, I guess he was wounded and sitting on the ground. They just walked up to him and shot him in the head. But what they really wanted was that bloody, what they got was a metal cylinder that had the treaties in it that Dulali carried with him all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess his sword eventually made its way up to Tahlequah. But they wanted those papers.
Well, original is down in was down in Austin. Wound up in Austin.
Mm-hmm.
The original, you know, copy, and then they gave him gave Dulali a copy also.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a copy of that, and someone has changed that from the old copy I had with Colonel Bowe. The new copy has Colonel Bowe, B-O-W-L-E-S. So, like every time a white man historian does something, he wants to change it around a little bit.
Well, I think
got a lot of my family that came across the trail. They wound up in Indian Territory, and then they wound up on the Dawes Road. But we're down here, we're not considered as real Indians, and by people in Tahlequah, which is all right, me. And we can't join on account of we wasn't there whenever that, you know, this all came through. And so I said, well, okay, that's all right. All of us down here, some did go back up there. Their families asked them to go back up. Jolly told me that my great grandfather said that he wasn't about to go up there. But a lot of them said, this is what they all said, that I've got word when I was real young, years ago, that if we went back up there, we might be hooked to the United States government and lose all of our land down here in Texas,
uh-huh.
and we're not about to go. And they didn't go. And it's pretty reasonable. I wouldn't have gone back up there either because, you know, the Indian has been, the red man has been shot pretty much holes out all our trees by the United States government. So why do that, you know, go up there and give away all your rights, really?
Yeah, yeah, it seems like the same thing here in Missouri. There's tons of, well, for instance, John Slayton. I met John Slayton. The U.S. government calls him James Slayton. But this man was a Medal of Honor winner, and he was pursued to his dying day by the alcohol, tobacco, and firearms people. I met him, I guess about 3-4 years ago, and obviously either he could have been no less than half Cherokee. He looked like he was full. He looked like he was possibly a full-blooded Indian. But being a full-blood Cherokee was by the traditional, they didn't care what color your skin was. It was, according to your attitude, is whether you were full-blood or not.
Oh, yeah, sure.
But this man looked like you. A lot of Indian blood and not a lot of white blood. But this man died here a couple of years ago and buried in Poplar Bluff. And, but he charged, took out 3 machine gun nests in Italy. And is a Medal of Honor winner, and
what did you say his name was?
Slayton, Slayton, and
I think I know who you're talking about. I know a lot of Medal. I want to. I go to their to their convention sometime with an old friend of mine, Roger Donald, who received the first Medal of Honor in Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
Is a ace captain. As a team leader, captain for the A team over close to Cambodia border.
He wrote the book, Outpost of Freedom, which I read years and years ago.
Huh?
He wrote the book Outpost of Freedom, which I read.
No, he wrote the book. He wrote the book, it's Nam Dong.
Mm-hmm.
Nam Dong, yeah.
Uh-huh.
He's an old friend of mine. He and his wife, Norma, are mine, Margie, you know, we call them real close friends, mm-hmm. as we are, because they're beautiful people. He is a tall Irishman from upper state New York, which means pretty good guy. And her family was interned in an Arkansas camp for Japanese people brought out of California. And she was born, her mother was pregnant when she come across from California to Arkansas, and she was born there in a camp.
Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper.
OCO. Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide. And then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
Oh, Norma's a beautiful lady, man. We love her passion, I tell you. This family does.
I know, I was so moved.
A lot of people got that problem.
I recommend as people get Captain Donlin's book, Outposts of Freedom from Interlibrary Loan. I was so moved.
That's right.
Every year, Captain Donlin and the survivors, they visit the grave of their I believe it's their first sergeant or master sergeant that was killed.
Yeah, he was a team leader, team sergeant, and I can't think of his name now, and I know who you're talking about.
I can't either, but I tell you, after I read that book, I personally made the pilgrimage to his grave at Arlington.
Yeah.
And the only...
he got the Distinguished Service Cross.
I wish I could have been there the time of the year, so I could have met Captain Donlin and the survivors. And,
Don retired as a full colonel. We was also in the advanced course together, Fort Benning, Georgia, the infantry officer advanced course, and a lot of my other friends. All my friends, since I was shot out of saddle early on in the military, all my friends are colonels and one general out of the bunch.
Right? Well, you were a captain, as I recall, right? When you...
Yes, I retired as a captain. I went in as an enlisted man. I was an enlisted man in the Korean War. a squad leader, and came home after college at Texas A&I in Kingsville, got my first degree and my commission. I'm overly educated. I've got 3 degrees. And got my commission, went back on to active duty. I went into Special Operations in 1959, and I got shot out of the saddle and retired in 1 June in 1969 with a full, you know, physical retirement. And I was in about a year in a hospital, Walter Reed and Womack Army Hospital. Came home, took me about 3 years to recover. And then a few years later, 1980, I was asked to go down and work with some Indians that I knew that I hadn't met at a different time and place at all. Some sashaying around the world. And they were the Summa, Mosquito, and Rama Indian tribes from Nicaragua. And they were fighting against the Sandinista communists. No matter what some of these people up here said, they were communists. And they were fighting against them, and I went out and talked to commando that I blew up things, and somehow so them and some of the others, you know, small unit tactics. So did a lot of other Americans. I wasn't the only one doing it. There was a lot of good stuff going on to help down to help those people.
Well, tell me, did you break the Neutrality Act when you went down there?
No, because I had support of the people in Washington, D.C.
Oh, you had orders. Okay. I know. I've got a friend.
Like I've always ran Blue Otter. I always ran. Nobody knew who I was, where I was going,
uh-huh.
Or who I was working for. None of nobody's damn business.
I've got a friend in Utah. His name was Bob Strongbear Bates, and Bob was down with a group under Colonel Grice.
Mm-hmm.
And one day some of the communists come across the border and snaps one of their buddies. And I mean, there was no war going on, so they had orders not to go rescue him. But they went and did it anyway, and I didn't know this until several years after I knew Bob, because we were invited to go over to Bosnia, and several people were, and go to Medjugorje because of the spiritual goings on over there. They were inviting Indians to go, and I invited Bobby, and he said, I can't go. And I said, well, why? He says, well, he says, I kind of violated the Neutrality Act, and I'm not allowed to go to war-torn lands, you know. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, well, he says, you know, they were in Panama, you know, one of his buddies was kidnapped, and he says, they raided the armory, crossed the border, snagged him, and brought him back. And one of the other guys that was Bob's friend that went on to become one of the editors for Soldier Fortune magazine. And, but Bob, he got back, he went on, he's got five different sets of jump wings, Chief. He's got jump wings from the United States, then he went TDY to Canada. He was with them for a while training. Then he went to TDY to Great Britain and trained with the Special Air Services. And then they sent him to be with the UN forces in Israel, and so he's got jump wings in the United States, Canada, Great Britain, Israel, and I think he somewhere Australia, I think, along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But he's sure got some stories to tell. Anyway, he came back to the United States and was a constable in down around Houston, which is the equivalent of a county sheriff, was investigating an accident and was hit by a drunk driver. And I think Bobby's had like 16 back surgeries in the last 25 years. And
mm-hmm.
he's quite a guy. I think you know who I'm talking about, Bob Bates.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about. Mm-hmm.
And he's quite a guy.
Well, see, I went into foreign countries that they didn't want me to go in. I mean, the U.S. government didn't want me to go in, too, but our job, we went in, too. And the only thing is, nobody knew what I was doing, who I was working for. So that's kept me pretty clear of everything. A lot of times I worked under that other name. And that's like on my email site for Owen. I had Striker Hit. I used Striker Hit when I was traveling in Southeast Asia, but I never ran ops under it. And when I was in Laos, I never did run ops under the name of D.L. Pappy Hicks. People who seen it brag and seen it different places knew who I was, but nobody else knew. And they never said, "Hey, Pappy, how you doing?" Because, you know, you just didn't do that. It's not over there. We all operated. A lot of them I knew that operated there that we never said a thing until after we came over here. And we didn't say anything out in public until U.S. Congress recognized General Vang Thao and the Hmong people of the mountains of Laos in 1997. And we had a big formation up at the up on the Mall of Washington, D.C. I went up and made a speech there, and I went up and made several speeches there with General Vang Thao. And then, you know, we could tell each other, you know, "Hey, knew each other was in Laos."
Uh-huh.
Even if we hadn't seen each other, we'd heard of each other and knew of each other from other guys like us. But otherwise, nobody knew where we went, what we did, or anything like that. And I'm glad of it because
saved life.
I was already. Huh?
It saved lives. You didn't know who the other guy was because
that's right.
It just helped the enemy build a dossier on you.
That's right. Yeah.
Dossier
on another name, you run an operation, but they don't know who. I guess now they've changed, you know, put Pappy Hicks on it, but a lot of people, it doesn't make any difference, you know, especially the Soviets who was in charge of operations in both Saigon and in Laos. People don't realize it.
Yeah, that's true. I guess that was it shortly before that or after that I guess President Clinton was at that ceremony with you and Vang Thao and the others, you know, after the decorations were declassified. And but you also I saw a picture at one time where you went and visited President Clinton with people from your tribe in his office after you filed for federal recognition.
Yeah, we didn't get in his office.
I'm late.
Up there. We got a letter stating that you know, go through Texas. Texas government down at Austin says go through Washington D.C. But no kidding.
Yeah.
So we're at a wall, a big wall between us and them, both governments.
Well, Texas has never really done a whole lot. I understand that there were, you know, years ago, maybe in the 40s and 50s, that there were there was initiatives to get some of the land back because they only soon had many acres.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand the state of Texas offer land in the panhandle, and you turned them back.
The reason the Texas government was able to just knock that in the head immediately because these weren't people who were originally Texas Cherokees. These were people from Tahlequah who was wanting land down here in Texas. And the Texas government was able to shoot them out of the saddle in a hurry before it was over. And we plowed through that before, you know. And so that's what my dad said. My father, he said, "Well, these people are not Texas Cherokees, but they came from Oklahoma and up here wanting to make some money, you know, and get some extra land." So it might have been, I don't know. I'm just going with what some of the old people said. You know.
Yeah. Well, I know you'd like to invite anyone out there who has Cherokee blood to join you. I guess all that's needed is an affidavit and
notarized affidavit. That's what your mama told you you were.
That's right.
Because as my father pointed out, when he came up this, if your mother doesn't know you, who in the hell does? No tribal government, no U.S. government, because he said, a notarized affidavit is good in any court in the land, including the Supreme Court of the United States. If you sign a notarized affidavit and you're caught lying, then you suffer consequences.
Uh-huh.
And everybody should know that. If they don't know it, they're in a world of hurt. Now, there's no doubt in my old feeble military mind that we don't have wannabes that's joined us. But most of the people that's with us have been known around their community that they are who they say they are. They've signed affidavits that that's who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no reason to disbelieve them.
Well, you know, you have a lot of people that have Cherokee blood that, you know, act like wannabes because they don't know how to act, you know,
and
so it's, you know, it takes time to reacculturate back into becoming alert what it's like to be a Cherokee. I know, you know, there's a lot of our people, well, you know, when the Ottawahee here, Grandfather Richard Craker, he said that years ago in the 60s, he started going to the Will Rogers Indian Club meetings, and he says, back in those days, everybody around Tahlequah, they were all wanting to learn Cheyenne Indian ways. And so they were, the Cherokees was wannabe Cheyennes. And he says,
right.
There was one old...
Well, they didn't have any of their own.
Right. He says, there was one old Cherokee Ottawahee, and they weren't interested in Cherokee ways. They were interested in Plains ways. And he says, but he's become apprentice up underneath this old Cherokee Ottawahee that could name his successors all the way, his predecessors all the way back to Dick Justice. And when he died, Grandfather Richard became old man. And he lives, oh, I guess, you know, 60, 70, 80 miles from here. And he put a stomp dance one day. It took maybe an hour to get through the stomp dance, but he spent 3 hours separating us into clans because you've got to be organized as clans first. And he there are 60 people there. He quizzed them all about, well, what's your mother's name, mother's mother, and mother as far back as you could remember, because you can't have stomp dance. And he had a list of names that he kept secret, and he checked it with what he knew and where the names came from, and organized us into clans and put us through stomp dance and drank the black drink. And, you know, unless you acculturate back into becoming Cherokee, I mean, you can run around with thinking and doing and saying all kinds of things that aren't Cherokee and give the impression you're a wannabe. But we invite everybody to come back and have people like Chief Hicks teach you how to be Cherokees, and we just won't have them. Any of them asked me to teach them any of the language.
it's hard. I've among all the things that I had besides my right side messed up and everything else, I've also got brain damage and I've lost most of my language because I've been away from it so long.
Mm.
I've lost Spanish I used to speak because I'm from South Texas. A little French, I knew enough to get something to drink. And my mouth and yard, you know, and stuff like that. And I was starting on my Zilagi when I was a kid, but it's hard to keep track of it, I want to guarantee you, especially that language. Jolly told me, he said, you learn this language, you will see old men sit around the fire and talk and never close their mouth. Because in our language, there's only two prominent words that has a letter where your lips come together. That's ama, water, and ama, salt. Everything else does not have your lips never come together.
That's
right. That's a pure old key, see? And R's, there's no R's in the Gatsuchi Dele, the over the hill people. The lower town that's close to what is now Georgia and South Carolina, down in Georgia, South Carolina, down that area, they had an R,
uh-huh.
which the overhills and the upper towns did not have.
Well, you just confirmed what John Red Hat taught me, because John was born about 25 miles away from here in Ada. Now, at the beginning of the broadcast, I said, you know, we're coming to you from Booger County. Well, Booker County is a five-county area that has been known for a long, long time to be Cherokee, old Cherokee area. It's a lot of mysterious things that have always gone on here, lights in the woods, and, you know, it was the white people, you know, that would see, you know, we'd be off in the woods someplace to stop dancing when it was illegal and you could get thrown in jail for it, as it did. So, you know, it was associated with supernatural, and most of the white people don't understand why it's called Booker County. But John said, now John was a Nighthawk Cusu, and you danced with the Nighthawk Cusus, and the Nighthawks, I mean, most of those people don't have, most of those are full blood and half blood, and they don't have cards in Tahlequah either, and they don't care to have them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as far as they're basically the religious general authorities for the Cherokees in Oklahoma, but, I mean, basically, you know, if you're from Tahlequah, you're not invited to come stop dancing with them, you know, and they actually, after the U.S. government broke up the Cherokee Nation, the only real sovereignty that remained with the Kituwa Society, in the 40s, some of those people, because the Kituwa Society couldn't be political because they were religious in nature, they operated on a very low-level political nature. Some of them broke off and formed an organization, incorporated as the United Kituwa Band of Cherokee Indians, and they were the first to receive a federal recognition in 1949, and a lot of people don't realize that.
Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, "My people perish for lack of knowledge." We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
And it was the Cherokee Nation, they incorporated as the Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, which really is a misnomer because Indian tribes are not supposed to be of another state. It's like, you know,
right. Yeah.
they're incorporated under the Indian Welfare
right.
Act. And,
we say we're not of Texas. We say we're in Texas.
Uh-huh.
That's right. That's right. Exactly what it is. We're in Texas.
That's right. And we don't have to ask anybody's permission to be a Cherokee. And, well, we got an attitude, don't we, Chief? That's the way it is. You know, after we moved to Oklahoma, I believe it was about 1890, we petitioned the United States government to the Oklahoma Cherokee, someone petitioned to let us go back to Mexico, because that's where we came from.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, you're a slave now, and you got to stay here.
Yeah.
And
you're talking about the people that has blood. Here is some near full blood, if not full blood, that lives right around in Tahlequah and that area.
Yeah.
That are not on the road.
Up north of town, yeah, they're up there.
Yeah, they never have been on the road.
That's right.
I know a lot of them. Some of them are the best artists you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't even, one his name was Stone, was the best wood carver you've ever seen.
Well,
he had to take all his carvings and everything. They took all his carvings out of the the museum and their place else on account of him not having a documented role from BIA.
That's right. Well, I know Clifford Alford, who's a member of your tribe, he lived in Tahlequah for several years and had a free traditional clinic right across from it was right on the square at Tahlequah.
Mm-hmm.
And until one Baptist preacher, Cherokee's mostly acculturated in Baptist church. There was one Baptist preacher that put out the word that Clifford Alford was the Antichrist. And after that, people stopped visiting his free traditional clinic.
Yeah.
But Clifford put him in charge of several springs, sacred springs out north of town. And he finally left town, but he said back about year 2000, shortly before he left town, he says people on Tahlequah, they got a real bug about wanting to get back to being traditional, and there was a couple meetings held, and he says there were several hundred people showed up at the first meeting, and then at the second meeting, Principal Chief was there, and somebody got up, and a lady said, does this mean we're all going to go back to wear buckskins? Anyway, the Chief got up at that point and thought, I'm a Baptist, and that really threw a wet blanket over the whole thing, it's really interesting, but, I know,
who are you talking about had the clinic?
Clifford Alford.
Oh, yeah.
Out in Oregon, New Mexico. You know, and I don't want to say, I'm not saying bad things about Chad Smith. Chad, wonderful guy. He's done a lot. He was responsible for asking the people in the Cherokee Nation, to stop calling people that don't have cards wannabes. And he's doing what
right.
he can, but he's under
off no end.
But, he's under political pressure to do certain things, and he does things behind the scenes, too, that people don't know about. Things, attitudes change slowly, I just found it so ironic that people, that most of the people in Cherokee Nation have become Christians, and they're pointing at the traditional Cherokees, most of whom don't have cards, and saying, well, you're not a Cherokee.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or any other kind of Indian.
Yeah. And the they had the same attitude toward the Eastern Band until they got federal recognition and club. Now they're best buddies. And back when Loma Mankiller was in office, I believe it was back in 94 or 5, they got together and had a joint resolution. It was in reaction to, I believe it was 80 Cherokee organizations that signed the Cherokee Unity document, and I made her mad, and the national councils in Tahlequah and Cherokee North Carolina got together made a joint resolution blasting the states of Georgia and Alabama for recognizing state recognizing Cherokee, some Cherokee tribes.
Mm-hmm.
But things are changing. I guess they viewed it as a threat to their sovereignty. But, there is no real sovereignty. You know, sovereignty is when you own your own artillery, you know?
Yes.
That's sovereign.
That's right.
You
that's
know.
Right. Your own artillery and tanks that need you've got a little.
You've got some sovereignty. If you don't, you know, if you can't keep armies away from your borders, you're not sovereign. You're sovereign. We're supposedly sovereign-dependent nations, which means...
That's right. All these sovereign people are just in the Cherokee tribe, offshoot tribe like we are and all this kind of stuff. They don't have any more sovereignty than anybody else in this country has. And one thing, too. When you say, native people... My wife's a native people. She's first-generation Finlander and lives up in Minnesota.
Yeah.
People come from Finland. But she's native. She's a Native American. Hell, she was born here. Where else was she born? And that's being Native American. She didn't come from the indigenous people of America.
Right. Well, that's what Russell Dean said. He says everybody's born here Native American. He says we voted over in Geneva to call ourselves American Indians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and there's all this political correctness and so forth. And
PC is one of a lot of people. And my father, in between, especially between tribe or in tribe, even inter tribe, and my father always said another thing that I've heard a lot of the people, Indians are the own worst enemy.
Yep.
And we do ourselves harm many times.
It really is. It's really sad. There's been so much, you just wouldn't believe the political fighting and wrangling and stuff that's gone up here in Missouri, Chief.
That's what I hear.
It's really sad. You know, I've got people that, the word got out. You know, I worked with one tribe up here for quite a while with their economic development director, and we arrived shortly at the time. Our second council meeting that we attended as observers, we watched the vice chief illegally take over the tribe. She supposedly put the chief on probation, but it was illegal. It was not on the agenda, and in proper time. And the only way to beat that was to have 80% of voting members there either by proxy, and you know that wasn't taken care of either.
Mm-hmm.
But she just was like a bulldog and kept pushing and pushing, and eventually did take over the tribe. But the takeover was illegal, and nobody ever believed anything that she said until she told people that my wife and her was in it with her from the beginning to depose the chief of that. So that's right. You know, Indians are their own word.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm glad to be your friend.
And, you know, so the word got out that I was a Fed. And there was even a lawyer, and he's, I won't mention his name, but he's a crusading Indian Cherokee attorney. And it took him a couple of years to sort it out, but and he'll tell you he never apologizes to anybody. Well, he called me one night, apologized to me. He says, "Scott," he says, "I got to looking into it," and he says all that. He says, "You're not guilty of any of that stuff." He says, "I had the tribe's entire records to go through," and he says, "and I was able to sort it out." He said that woman, all she had to do was make the statement. She knew how to divide and conquer. And you see, we've learned, Indian people have learned from white people how,
yeah,
they've learned how to do a lot of things. There's nothing happier in Indian politics. I've never seen the likes of it.
Yeah, and they're always fighting, especially when you get into intertribal. We was in this intertribal thing. I was driving home one night, and there'd been a lot of confusion going on and everything between some of the people, especially some of the women. Now, ladies, we had more trouble with women than we did men. Men are afraid of each other. And so we're driving home, and after all this, Dad says, "The worst problem you have in any meeting is when they try to out-Indian each other."
Yeah.
You know, I'm more Indian than you are.
Yeah.
I know more about it than you do.
That shows a lack of self-esteem. That's another thing I said about Indians is we have low self.
Yeah.
If we have good self-esteem, why would we be wanting to out-Indian each other?
Yeah, that's correct.
It's so silly.
Correct.
But you know, this is the I'm a seventh generation now from removal, and we're into the birth pangs now of creators reorganizing us and reintroducing ourselves to each other, and according to the prophecies, there won't be a U.S. government or any other governments here pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be back on our own again, and we can be free.
As a fight without tanks and guns.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know who was a prophet? Well, it was old Albert Einstein.
Mm-hmm.
He said he wasn't sure how the... This is the World War II. He says he wasn't sure how they were going to fight World War III, but he knew that World War IV was going to be fought with spears and rocks.
He might be right.
So there might not be a whole lot of us left, but as long as the Cherokees have got caves to go to get away from the radiation, when that's over with, there'll be Cherokees.
We'll farm up again.
That's right. Start over again. But anyway...
As long as you got the blood, no matter how much. I'm a little over a quarter, but I don't give a damn if you're, just as me just say, hey, my great-great-great-grandfather or great-great-great-grandmother, that's fine with me.
Well, the Great Spirit can reteach us our ways and our ceremonies. Or he can form us all into, a new nation as far as that goes. Mm-hmm.
By the way, Chief Rogers down in Brownsville, Dr. Rogers, sent me a booklet that he had written up about what's going on down along the border of our country, especially along Texas, in the Clermont Throat. And he put in there about how he had been kidnapped out of his clinic in Matamoros, right across the river.
Now remember, we're on the air, Chief. You want this to go on the air?
Yes, right.
Okay.
And because he put it out publicly now.
Oh, good.
And I wouldn't be saying anything about it. And he sent this document that he, small pamphlet, he sent out. He sent it to all the people in Congress, this thing, and explaining all the problems we're having down there. Plus him being kidnapped and his family having to pay off a pretty good size ransom. He is taking his all of his clinic work is having to be done by satellite on a big screen areas at home because he's afraid to cross the border again. He is wanting to get across back to his clinic because if he says a lot of people are going to die if I don't get back over there. My wife and some other people said, hey, look how much work he has done in Mexico, and look what he has done for all the Mexican people. And then they come in and do that. I had a reminder that some of the people does not care who they hurt or who they kill or who they fight or anything, as long as they get the money.
Well, they came right into his office and kidnapped him, didn't they?
Yes. Yes, three men came in and pinned him up some more people. And they're not sure... if they're police or what they are or who they are.
Uh-huh.
He was pretty angry, so he put in this letter and said, that may be police.
Well, that's the rumor down there that the banditos is the federales at daytime and banditos at night.
Yeah. That's the truth. As much as I like Mexico, I've been down there, going down there since I was a kid. Got a lot of friends down there. And as long as I've been down there, going down there, and I like so many people, that's the way it is with their government. And it's hard to get around, and we're really standing on right going one way or another with so many Mexicans coming up here that they want to send in, banditos and things like that, and also people that's from the Mideast and what have you. When I was down in Central America, me and some of the other guys wrote back, sent back documents and everything about all of the people from the Muslims in Central America,
mm-hmm.
and the Chinese that came up, and now they're out on, and now they're finding out and saying, yes, we've known that for 20 years that they were doing that. Well, baloney, you know, we just tell them that, that they were down there.
They don't want to know.
There's a lot of Chinese on the around the Panama Canal, and there are a lot of Muslims all around in central and southern Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming up further now. So they come across the border and blow up another train or something.
Well, they found a jacket somewhere on the border just last week. It really, there was a big panic in the last week or so on the border because there was a jacket that was found that had embroidered on it two towers, you know, with an airplane flying
right.
Border, you know. And
yeah.
People be bringing.
Well, I'm about to play out, Blue Otter. I'm going to have to.
Okay.
Have to go. I'm about to choke down.
We sure appreciate you being it and being a real trooper.
Okay. Yeah, you've been a good interrogator.
Well, we've elicited enough information from him. We'll let you go, and thank you so much, Chief, and folks. We encourage you to. But it's still a $15 processing fee for application.
Who it is? No, it's
$25. $25, okay.
And $10 for family members after the first person has come in, then $10 for each family member after that.
Well, we'll put up a link so people can download applications and. I know there's Cherokees all over the place. I know would really could benefit from associating with y'all.
Yeah,
well,
thank you very much.
Thank you. And this has been another edition of Prophecy Keepers. And as a matter of fact, you are our 52nd interview. You are the first anniversary of Prophecy Keepers Radio, Chief. And
oh, good.
Thank you so much. Goodbye now.
Glad to join you.
Bye-bye. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy keepers, prophecy keepers, prophecy.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
Prophecy Keeper. Prophecy Keeper. Tell me your great secrets deep inside your heart. Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow. Let the truth be known to all mankind again. Prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper. Let the truth